And we forgot the breast pump. We like literally we get there and we're like, where's the fucking machine at? And we're like, all right, let's go to the pharmacy in Mexico. Like, oh girl, we in for so we get there and they have those bicycle horn pumps. So I literally run back and I'm like, I'm ready.
Hello to all of our exhausted and exhilarated working parents, and welcome to The Tightrope, a show about balancing career, motherhood, and everything in between. We are your hosts, Jess Felt, and this is Daniela Cornu, and this week we're going to have a little bit of fun. We've invited our husbands and our friends who are fathers onto the show to talk about their experiences. Let's get into it. All right. So what we talked about last week was that we need equity in our household so that we can have equity in the workplace, right? This is something that we talk about. But if we're going to have equity in the workplace and we're going to have equity at home, we need to give dads an equity in voice, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Like, because we all know as moms, we have mom groups, we have Facebook groups, we have group chats. We as moms talk about the mom stuff all the time. And dads just don't really have that forum to be able to talk about fatherhood. We thought about, you know what, why don't we reach out to a few of our favorite fathers and listen for the dad perspective?
And I think that these conversations, the beginnings of these conversations are going to feed so much progress. I was really impressed with a lot of the stuff that came out of this conversation with, there are actually a lot of, two of them are our husbands, not a lot of them, that sounds weird. Two of them are our husbands. And then, you know, two close friends of ours that we know are really hardworking dads, right? So we're going to introduce you to them within the actual, you know, podcast. But there were some themes that came out of this conversation. What were some of the things that you noticed?
Yeah, the theme of the default parent is going to come up a lot during this. But beyond the idea of the default parent, I think what is really obvious, and you can listen for this as well, is that dads don't have built-in support systems.
Yeah, that is, I think, something that I hear, running Late Village, you know, and having as much dad buy-in that we do, that they didn't have really a model of the type of fatherhood that is expected of them. And we're going to talk about this. This is actually a two-part series, right? So it was such a good conversation that we decided to record this in two parts. So this is part one, and we're going to talk about this in part two as well. But again, this idea of modern fatherhood and what it means to be a modern father and how the lack of support systems has really kind of left them high and dry. They don't even know what it looks like for them. They are literally building this airplane as they're flying it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm so excited, not just for today's episode, but for our next episode as well, because yeah, it was such a good conversation. We just kept going because we don't want to lose this perspective. We don't want to lose this voice, because it is so important to the topics that we talk about here. If we're going to be impacting mom, we also have to be talking about dad.
100%. Well, what do you think? Should we jump into it and get into it?
Yes.
So to get us started today, I want to have our dads have an opportunity to introduce themselves. And so just take a very quick moment to introduce who you are. And as a little bit of an icebreaker here, I would love for you to share the first moment that you thought, oh shit, I'm a dad now. And I am lucky enough to have my husband on the panel. And so I'm going to call on Ryan to go first here to introduce himself, because that's what you get when you're my husband.
Awesome. Happy to go first. It's perks of the job. So I'm Ryan Felt, Mr. Jess Felt Coaching here today. I've got two kids. You know, Caleb is our eldest son, who's four. We have another son, Jonah, who's two. They're behind that screen, hopefully not going to be too loud today. I've been in Chicago for about 30 years, actually originally from South Africa. So came here, it was a lot colder, but otherwise it's been a great home for me over the 30 years. Got two sisters, parents live here in Chicago, so have some good roots here. Met Jess over 10 years ago and at a job, and had awesome adventures together, and you know, with the kids, it's been great. I work in healthcare technology, so if you go to your doctor and you get a text message, change it for by your appointment reminder, that's me. We do stuff like that. So it's been a fun ride during COVID to see our business grow. So what else about me? I guess
I think your oh shit, I'm a dad now moment.
Yes, that moment. Yeah, I'd say like that oh shit moment was probably at our 36-week ultrasound for our first son, Caleb. So obviously 36 weeks, you preparing to be a dad, you know it's coming, it's happening, but it's just theoretical. There's a belly, but you know, you don't really know. And then you see the ultrasounds and it feels quite real. But then at 36-week ultrasound, the doctor was like, yeah, you're ready, 2 centimeters dilated, this baby could be here any minute. And I was like, oh boy, like I thought I had another month, this could be tomorrow. And Jess looked at me and I was like, okay, like it is basically go time now. So I think that was the case, and the baby did come a couple weeks early, but that was a good oh shit moment.
Awesome. Nate, I'm going to come to you next as Mr. Lay Village.
Mr. Lay Village. I'm Nate Cornu. I'm Daniela's husband. Daniela and I met here in Chicago 13, 14 years ago. And I don't know, we've kind of developed a reputation as a bit of a power couple. We're both entrepreneurs and constantly on the run and trying new things. I own a business called Boomerang Exhibits, and we build displays and signs primarily for trade shows. And we've got a great thing going. We've been in business for about 7 years. So that's amazing. We have a 4.5-year-old daughter, Genevieve, Vivi. She is the light of my life. She's just such a sweet and compassionate child. And she lights up the room anytime you walk into it. So, you know, being a father to her is, it's too easy. And every time we talk about maybe having another kid, I'm like, do we really want to go down this road? Because that second kid I hear is never the same as the first. So, I mean, I've got a fairly similar, just slightly later in the stage, oh shit moment. It was literally in the delivery room. And I told Danny that I wasn't going to look. But our midwife was like, you want to come look? And I'm like, yeah, I mean, yeah. And sure enough, there's a little head poking out, and holy cow, man, that hit me like a ton of bricks. There it is. There's our baby.
That's a great moment. George, I'm going to have you introduce yourself next.
I love that one. You know everything now.
Too much.
To further that actually, I'm going to... Can I bend the rules and go with my funny story first?
Sure, you can. You're going to be hard today, aren't you?
Just a little bit. Yes, you can. Just the other day, I realized I'm really a dad now because I actually had shit in my hand that went into my nose because my second, so I have two daughters, I'm a girl dad all the way, and even more so, I have three sisters, 11 aunts. I'm friends and family with the two of you, Danny and Vivi, and all these women in my life. And for the first time, I was on the receiving end of a bad diaper over the, you know, I've been a dad now for 7 years on Sunday. And I can tell you that every day brings a new challenge, a new thing that I didn't see coming.
How did it end up in your nose?
We can save the specifics. It was just a lot of chaos, but so that was
a lot of shit.
you didn't pack enough diapers. Is basically the theme that I got from that one. So that was a fun curveball. But to go back about myself is you know, I come from a very tight knit Mexican family that both my parents were first gen immigrants from Mexico. And, you know, through there, my dad was an entrepreneur as well, and my mom was a banker. And so I followed in my mom's footsteps because women know better.
Wise words.
And so, you know, I think one of the things that I find in my life is that I always bring it back to the simple things. And that's what's, you know, helped me get to where I'm at today. I'm very happy with my two kids and my wife living on the north side, which she's always been supportive of, you know, being on the north side, even though she's a Sox fan. So we won't hold that against her. But yeah, it's one of those little details about marriage.
Awesome. And Dave.
Yeah, what do you mean? Yeah, Dave Horstein. Let's see. I'm going to start with my oh shit moment too.
I started.
Mine was actually pre-birth too. I think you're supposed to write.
Yep.
And it was all along. We thought we were having a boy. My whole family's boys, beyond my sisters, obviously. So I have two sisters and four nephews. And so we were convinced we've got a boy coming. I was all mentally prepared. Then we got the phone call and they told us it's a girl. And I think in that moment, I didn't quite know exactly what I was doing anymore. I felt confident, like we've got this. And then I realized I have to just change my whole mindset and be ready for different set of challenges, different set of opportunities. But I remember at a family party, my uncle told me there's nothing like having a girl. And that is so right. I didn't expect that. I really didn't expect that this little baby would come in and make such an impression on me, especially a girl, because I was just so sure I was having a boy. But it is so different. It is so unique. And so I'm grateful to have that in our 3.5-year-old daughter, Haley. And my wife's here as well. So I'm glad to have her support. Tiffany and I met
13?
Something like that. Yeah.
They're like, stop looking at us.
We're not here. Am I right or am I always wrong?
Yeah.
We're always wrong.
Yeah. She's keeping me honest. yeah, but we met in, I had grown up in the city too, similar to Ryan. Spent most of my life here, probably over 30 years now. But after moving away in high school, I swore I'd never come back. And then I met my wife. And begrudgingly came back. Now I can't imagine being anywhere else. So that worked out really well. My day job, so I am in consulting, work in somewhat management consulting, IT consulting, where kind of those two things come together. And I've been doing that for about 14 years now. Used to be a lot of travel, which we might get into that a little bit today, how that's changed a little. Now it's been nice. I work from home pretty much 100%. And that impacts a lot of how our family dynamic is shaped. So I'm sure we'll chat about that.
Absolutely. So we are so happy to have you four here talking today about fatherhood. And we are going to get started with the very early days of fatherhood. So we're going to start with talking about a little bit about the newborn phase, because we often associate the postpartum period strictly with mothers and the hormonal changes that you go through. And everything that just comes with that kind of like post-pregnancy, post-delivery phase. But there's a lot of transition that happens for dads during that phase as well. So I'm really curious about your experiences during those early days. And George, I want to start with you first.
Oh, no. I'm hoping to be last. You guys, I was telling my dad this. I feel like the first few year was kind of feeling lost in the woods, right? You're just kind of reread the books, and I'm not gonna lie, guys, reading baby books is not what you picture it. I maybe skimmed. Let's just say.
I didn't even make an effort. I didn't even bother.
I appreciate your honesty.
Danny was not thrilled with me, but I was just like, you read them all, you just tell me what to do.
So I did the thing where I kind of was like, okay, I'm on the blueprint of what we're doing, right? And then immediately Shay was just not sleeping. Like it was pandemonium like 6 weeks in, and she's in our room and Mary's not sleeping. I can sleep through like a truck like backing up into my room, and I'll be like, well, I slept just fine at the time. That's how I used to be. And so the whole postpartum thing for me was a feeling of like, being lost from a sense of she's hypersensitive and I don't understand why she's hypersensitive. And I can't talk to anyone about it because nobody else, you know, at least my circle was like ambivalent about it. My dad'd be like, whatever, just deal with it. It'll be fine. I was like, cool. That doesn't really help me because I can't really report back. Everything's fine. So long story short, they're both still alive and I'm still married.
Nice work, George. Nice work.
But I will say that that first year felt like that lost in the woods kind of like I'm kind of firing by my own hip of who do I turn to? Where do I, there was no support system.
Who can relate to that or who had a different experience?
I mean, I would say like it was actually very different for each kid. And I think like obviously the first is the most impressionable and some have one. So that's the frame we'll start with. I mean, I think like for me, I remember like asking someone before I had my kid, like, you know, you see kids around like, oh, it's like they're always crying and blah, blah, blah. It's like, she's like, yeah, but like once it's your kid, it's just different, right? It's like you'll deal with it. And I found that to be generally true. You know, like I definitely felt like, you know, the baby comes, like you said, it's like, oh my God, this is like the future of my world. And you want that to be the case. You dive in head first. Jess definitely did more research. I read the books a little bit. A lot of it was like, you know, how to do things naturally. And like, we are both very like healthy paleo, at least I am. So like, I like that stuff. So like, it was natural for me to think in that lens and like, look at how we did things for him, at least our firstborn. But yeah, I mean, there was definitely the moments where things got out of control. I say for me personally, I didn't realize like how sensitive I was to some of the things that he would do that just like set me off. I'm a pretty even keel guy. And all of a sudden I'm like yelling in the car at the car in front of me with road rage. I'm like, who is this person? Like, I've never liked that. Like, the car is, the car was my weakness. Like, oh my God, was to go somewhere with the baby in the car? Like, no dice. So that was tough. But in general, like, our first son was easier than our second. That's why I feel like I have to tell two stories.
Yeah.
But that, you know, I would say it was generally amazing. Like, he was a really easygoing kid. I had a strong connection with him. You know, Jess was great with him too. So yeah, I'd say like the tiredness, those like moments of absolute anger and exhaustion, I did not know how to deal with that. So, you know, emotion regulation was something I had to kind of learn for the first time because I really never had that problem before. And it's tough, you know, like you feel the emotion and your first reaction is, I just want to express it. But then you find yourself like yelling at your kid. It's like, who, like, why, like, why am I in the moment? You like, it feels good to release that. But then like maybe 5 minutes later, the kid doesn't even know what just happened. But then you feel like super freaking guilty. And when you like reflect back on that, it's like, I don't want to be that kind of dad.
Dad guilt. Yeah. That's a new, you know, we talk a lot about mom guilt, right?
Yeah,
dad
guilt. No, for sure.
Oh, Ryan and I get into plenty of conversations about that.
Well, and like, and then Jonah's second was like, way harder. It was COVID. He was a struggle, and I thought I had it covered. But then the second one came, and it was like you said, you don't know what it's not gonna be like the first one at all. So that was a whole new ball game. But you know, it was a unique situation. But overall, like, you know, that I don't mind that early stage. It's not my favorite. I think each time they get older, I'm like, oh, this is my favorite stage. And then like they get older, it's like, oh, this is the favorite stage. Maybe at some point that will keep happening, but that's what I found so far.
Well, I think it's interesting that Ryan, both you and George mentioned a bit of a lack of support at those early stages of like, I have these emotions or I have these questions and I don't know what to do with them, right? Like the big emotions and just like George, you had mentioned, like, I went to my dad and he's like, deal with it. Okay. Like that's not super helpful. Right. And Ryan, like I was yelling at the car in front of me, like, what do I do with all of this? Because it is really easy for newborns and babies and kids to like trigger all of these big emotions.
Yeah. And you know, I had a little bit more support. Two of my brothers had kids within a year of mm-hmm. the baby.
Yeah. They're like 6 months before. On either yeah. side.
Three
yeah.
kids within six months and then 6 months. So, you know, I definitely had, you know, an outlet and a place to like talk about things. None of it's like in the moment necessarily.
Right.
Like there's so much that happens in the moment and
right.
dealing with your wife who's, you know, hormonal, dealing with all the hormones and all the postpartum like physical things and everything, like that was hard. really hard to like understand where she was and like do everything I could to support her. And like, you can talk to your brother about that all you want, but you know, he's almost as bad as dad. He's like, yeah, she'll be fine. You know? So, but you know, I did have a little bit of a support system, but, and you know, that was beneficial for sure. You know, my older brother has a son that's a year older than Vivi, and my younger brother has a daughter that's 6 months older than Vivi. So, you know, we were kind of all in it together. And my older brother lives here in Chicago, and he has two older daughters as well. So, you know, we were around while they were being raised, and we were very involved in their, you know, upbringing and whatever else is Aunt Annie and Uncle Nate. And so, you know, we had our finger on the pulse. I think we kind of knew a little bit what to expect, and you know, nothing prepares you for it, but, you know, a little bit more preparation. You know, I didn't read the books, but we did all of our pre-birth appointments through a midwife program, and it was a group program. We would go in every week
on Friday,
week or every 2 weeks or whatever, yeah. And we would sit in a room with these other couples that were all pregnant and due around the same time, and we sat there with our midwife, and they did an amazing job, like preparing us for so many aspects of parenthood, you know, not just like, you know, everything like up to birth, but like birth and then afterwards and everything else. So
preparing for postpartum, yep. And stuff like
I will say, I wish that something that was a little bit more common here in the U.S. and other countries, having that more of like a midwife doula type experience to help you through it and to help not just the mom, but the dad through it as well. I wish that was more common here because, I mean, that experience is so valuable.
Absolutely.
But I mean, we didn't have that experience. We went to like one class that was CPR that was just like, you should do this. It's not regulated. Like, you don't have to, but you should.
Yeah. You probably should.
And that was literally the only class. But I know of that program that you went through. And
we also had a doula.
Yeah.
We did both. We had the group program that was amazing. And then we had a doula as well, which I never thought in a million years that I would get a doula. But I wanted a fierce advocate. And I wanted Nate to be – I was like, you want to talk about – marriage ruining experiences, right? I knew that having Nate in like the pilot seat was probably not going to be a good idea because Nate tried to teach me how to snowboard one time as like my coach. It did not go well. So I was like, I'm not sure that having him and, you know, a coaching seat in the delivery room is going to work out for us. So we ended up getting a doula, and it really was an amazing experience.
I love that it's like a practical experience. I already know we don't work well together here.
We knew that. Go ahead.
Let's bring in an expert.
Let's bring in like a barrier.
Dave, I'm really interested in your experience here. You mentioned being in consulting. I'm curious if you're open to sharing, how much paternity leave, if any, did you get?
Yeah. Oh, man, you're hitting on, as they're talking, I'm thinking through. I think my experience was probably most similar to Nate's, like tying this together. I'm gonna get to that actually quickly, because I think we didn't do books or videos, and I can't see Tiffany, so she could potentially correct me if I'm forgetting things. But.
I was wondering that.
Yeah, one word of the place. But our siblings all, it felt like I've been through it four times with my sisters, I've seen it. I kind of felt like we were okay. We had my in-laws come in for a couple of weeks, but it kind of felt like after a couple of days, like maybe we didn't really need the help that we thought we did. But where things changed was we only had 2 weeks of paternity
leave. Both of you?
Me.
Oh, just you. Okay.
Paternity leave. Yeah.
I'm self-employed.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so, Tiffany owns her. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the guilt for me was, but she was feeding, so breastfeeding, and so she would get up every night. And it was, you know, a lot on her, and I'd have to get up and work. Pretty, you know, it was within 2 weeks of Haley being born, like having to go back. And I think we've learned some lessons. If we end up doing it a second time around, we could probably figure out ways to trade off a little bit more. But the guilt of not being the one in the room with Haley in the middle of the night and being able to sleep, but then like justifying it, oh, but I've got 8 hours of work of it. But it feels unfair for that sort of benefit, for only having 2 weeks. And my company has since been trying to address that, try to figure out like what can we do, But 2 weeks just felt really short. And so the dad guilt for me was pretty strong for a while there. Second, next time around, I'd probably work something else out.
Can I jump in here? I have a question, just like organic question. So can I just get a quick call out for everybody? How long was your paternity leave, just for everybody?
I haven't taken a vacation, and I don't know. Could that be zero days? I don't know.
Five days.
Did I guess five days?
I think it was probably 2 weeks for both, but I worked for a startup also, so like not no benefits.
Yeah, I would not say that those were two full consistent weeks off. I would say that was 2 weeks I'm in the house, but I'm also working.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Nate, what was your...
You know, I own my business, so and both of my business partners were fathers before me, so I gave them a lot of support. So
a couple hours.
A lot of support.
No, I
was able to step away for I think it was 6 weeks that we did.
Okay. I think we did a month.
We might have done a month and then a couple
different recollections here
or whatever. So long ago.
Yeah.
But even that didn't feel like enough. You know, it still.
So my question is, one of the things that we talk a lot about on the mom side is how the lack of paternity leave really sets up the first pieces of kind of inequality in the household, mm-hmm. right? Do you guys agree with that statement or disagree with that statement?
Absolutely.
From what lens, though?
From the lens of like mothers become kind of a default parent because they create in that time frame, right? Yeah. That you guys go right back to work. They start to create the routines and the structure and the things and all of those things. And then dads, not even voluntarily, they're kind of forced to miss out on those experiences.
I think I'm 50-50. You guys correct me. I kind of look at it from being sidecar, right?
Yeah.
To the experience that regardless if I have the job or not, we chose to do breastfeeding with Shay, our oldest. We breastfed with both. And I haven't figured out how to lactate. I tried. I have the equipment. But you know, really, it made you know. And I'll be honest with you guys. My job in banking is always I've always created my own schedule. So if I need, and that's why I struggle with the frame. I'm not going to say that I chose to work because I work and serve as small business owners like yourself, and your schedules change like any schedule changes. And so I give myself the flexibility to know when I have to wear that hat. But I don't think I get what you're saying. I could see why some individuals would probably be susceptible to, like, if it's, for instance, my dad's job. He had to be on from 4 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock at night. He missed out on all those moments to be able to be a provider, right? He was forced into that because if he didn't do it, he didn't have an opportunity to take it. So from that lens, I can see where you're completely on the mark. And then from the lens, at least from my experience as a dad, and this is where the generational difference kind of comes into play, is that they equip me with the tools so that I can communicate effectively with the people around me so that I can say, hey, this has happened in my life. The things that we don't anticipate as parents are the curveballs of like when those sleep schedules really drain you. And even though you're supposed to be on vacation or you're supposed to be doing something else, but you only slept 3 hours and you're supposed to power through and your wife didn't sleep any hours, those are the parts where I'm like, would have made a difference if I was there or not there. Because in all honesty, I felt, you guys tell me, it's almost sometimes worse if I'm in the room. Does that make sense?
Yeah, there's like a level of connection that happens between a mother and a baby, I think. And like dad can't interrupt that in any way, shape, or form. There's no matter how present you are, I don't know. There's like that level of it.
Research will back up that if fathers are as present, they can build the same level of bonds with their children as mothers, regardless of breastfeeding or not. That if the dad is present, so if you think about it, you're breastfeeding for, let's say, like 30, 45 minutes at a time, and then you have a huge stretch in between, right? That all of this other stuff needs to get done. And in other countries, I will say paternity leave can be as up to 4 months, 6 months in other countries that can be shared with the mom and split up. But here in the States, on average, dads take less than 10 days.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I definitely think it's like not enough. Obviously, like, I think it would be great to have more. And I think even for maternity, for you, it wasn't a lot. Like, our son going to daycare at like 4 months, none of us are ready for that, you know? So that, I think that's a general problem on both sides. So should it be like both should get more? I think absolutely. I'd say the one thing like around the feeding specifically that was like stressful was that like, yeah, you got that window between the feeding to bond, but like they're napping. And there's like the awake time, right? And that's great. But usually it's a ticking time bomb until it's like, it's time to, you know, feed again. And you know that you like are just like, you almost feel like I'm just here to distract until
like stopgap.
Basically. And like, you know, that's not fair for anyone. Like that sucks for all people's involved. And then with our youngest, we ended up doing formula after a while. And then that dynamic shifts. So I think I definitely fell with our first, like, I'm just here to extend this. And like, yeah, maybe the first hour is a fun hang, but then like the next 30 minutes is like, I'm just trying to distract him because like mom's not ready, you know, to breastfeed yet. So that's just like, that sucks for everyone, right? But I do think, yeah, like ideally, like the best companies, it's like 4, 5, 6 months. Like, of course, out of like that. But also do you feel like there's moments? I think it was with Caleb, I split the time. I think I took like the first week, but then we had so much help that I went back to work. But then when Jess went back to work, I took another week off to like help her go back to work without him going to daycare yet. So I think there's moments in that first 6 months where it's probably needed more. So like maybe there's a way where like maybe overall it's only 2 or 3 months, but if you can actually pick when you want to take it,
to it. Yeah,
I think absolutely.
Did you find yourself in that time, like sometimes I tell people that my work days are my weekends. And I love my children, don't get me wrong, but I guess the way my life has always been is like the work is almost an escape from the painful moments, right? When I take an owl as a dad, right? I try to apply myself to the situation. This morning I tried to get Ellie out of bed. Mary was working out, so I was like, all right, let me be the first one to open the door. And immediately she's like, what do you think you're doing right now? Yeah. So, oh, dude, it blew up in my face big time. It was 20 minutes of, and then now we're playing from behind because now we got to get, you know what I'm saying? So it snowballs. And so the relief is to make a call for business. Like, are you going to yell at me right now?
I mean, that's definitely true, but I'll definitely say with like my youngest, it's the opposite. He was like preferring me. So like I had to be the one doing all those things. And you know, it was tough for Jess. So like, I think that's,
I wonder what your wife would say about that.
Oh, it was incredibly hard for me. He definitely preferred Ryan.
Oh, that's a divide and conquer. Like, I can't be in the room. Cause then like, it's like, I want daddy to do it. So yeah. I think like, if you flip the script that way, then like it sucks for the mom in that scenario. So like, it's either way, but like the work as an escape thing is definitely real. And I think everyone wants to feel like useful, like, you know, like you're not just like babbling all day.
Right.
Do you guys think that women mothers would like to
I was going to ask you that question.
Because I think that would
answer.
Be
the
like,
answer is yes.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge, right? Is that I think I'm looking at your wives behind you and I'm thinking about Jess right next to me. And I think that like what's resonating with me is like, yeah, guys. Yeah. But I think women would also like to work as an escape too sometimes because it's hard for everybody.
Yeah. That's why we have our kids in daycare full time, even though I don't work full time. I'm very privileged to be able to say that. But yeah, there's a very
big
part of that.
Is so hard on every single level. So I think I have enough. I'm sorry, Jess. I'm like derailing your.
That's
things,
okay.
Can I ask some questions? Can I ask?
You can
a
have
follow-up?
One more question and then I'm going to come back to my question.
Okay. Perfect. I love this. But do you think that breast is best has made it harder for dads? Because people now are...
So breast is best, if you're not familiar, is kind of the mantra that says you should be breastfeeding.
And only breastfeeding.
There's a lot of very controversial topics about this. It's like bed is best, breast is best.
Can we ask who's winning the... who's winning the fight right now?
I don't think
there's no winner.
There's no winner.
I'm the team fed is best. Breast is best, which I...
Non-breast.
Fed is best.
Just like formula or whatever.
Yeah, whatever. But I will say hospitals push, rest is best.
Okay.
Is the question?
Well, because I wonder, because a lot of what you guys have latched on to is like, well, I can't feed this baby. And so there's this meltdown period with this child.
So Dave and I kind of talked about this a lot in the beginning because our daughter was born 2 months before COVID and I had a flexible schedule because I was self-employed. Our daughter was fully breastfed, but it would have been nice to be able to pump, give him the bottle, and then feed him. And that would have also changed way down the line. But since we weren't leaving the house at some point, and he was working full-time and I was flexible, there was no reason to clean pump parts.
I remember that. Yeah.
And all of this other stuff. And so it became the default of, well, this is more convenient and this is easier. But then when we tried to leave the house again, or we tried to change that, and she was still breastfeeding, there was no way she was going to do anything else.
Right.
So me leaving wasn't even an option because then she didn't have food because she wouldn't drink from a bottle. And so I think even though those were the decisions that we made, even when a mom is breastfeeding, there are options for a dad to still feed that make it easier for a mom to like get that extra 2 hours of sleep because pumping is 15 minutes and feeding the baby, changing the baby, burping the baby, all of that extra stuff could be an hour by the time you're done with all of it. And so if they're feeding twice in the middle of the night, but mom can pump the first time and feed the second and dad can feed from bottle the first time and sleep the second, there's still a lot of options. I think we just don't
talk about it. We don't talk about this. This is why we're doing this, right? Yep. We don't talk about these things. Nate and I had a similar but different experience because
We were able to. Like, we were kind of forced in.
We were forced in. Do you want to talk about it? Tell the story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Danny was having a hard time producing enough milk, basically. So we ended up having to supplement with formula pretty early on. And there was breastfeeding and there was breast milk involved, but there was also formula.
It's called combination
feeding. And there was also pumping and, you know, everything, you know. It was a lot for everybody. And Danny had a lot of guilt about it. Like, oh my gosh, I can't feed my baby, whatever else. But in the end, it was a blessing in disguise because I was absolutely able to just be like, bye, go take a shower. Change her diaper and put her down while you're not here. And so I think we were able to, like, co-parent.
And I think
that's pretty equitably in that.
In the early phases, yeah. And I think, too, I think this comes in, I think about this a lot for our non-binary families or families that have same-sex parents and things like that, where it's like, it doesn't have to be this male-female thing either. It can be this situation where I know, Abby, one of our franchisees and her wife, like, they're constantly, like, figuring out how to have an equitable, like...
Yeah. I didn't pick my dog in the fight because I can't. I think the one thing that we did really well too is communicate effectively with the plan. Mary and I decided we're going to go breastfeeding. I don't think we knew we were in for a winner or a loser in the situation. But then we went to a wedding. How dare us? We went to a wedding in Mexico and we forgot the breast pump. We get there and we're like, where's the fucking machine at? And we're like, all right, let's go to the pharmacy in Mexico. Like, oh girl, we in for so we get there and they have those bicycle horn pumps. So I literally run back and I'm like, I'm ready. When you talk about leaning in, I think it's because I have the sisters and I knew what I was in for, right? So, long story short, that did not work.
I'm sure you gave it your all.
So what happened then was we get back in just that short period of time. She could no longer, for Trichet, reproduce milk. And so I remember, to your point, the devastation and I think the hurt, and that's why I like put to me the postpartum hit in different stages. I remember the disappointment that she felt as a mother that she failed because she forgot, like she forgot the breast pump, right? It's her responsibility. I'm equally at fault. Like shit, I knew where it was. I forgot to grab said pump. And so to pick one would be, you know, that's the thing is that, and so anecdotal for me, I know equal amount of friends who have done, you know, the artificial versus the real thing. And all these kids to me are beautiful. And I can't say that one or the others.
Yeah. I mean, like as a peer, like I'm like very healthy. I'd say I was paleo. So like, obviously like breast is best in that sense. That like, okay, you want to give the kid the best nutrients possible. But like, if that is causing all this stress for you and your wife, then like, that's a loss. So like, obviously fed is best. Like with our youngest, we had with Jonah, we had to get off breast because he was having lactose issues. So basically, like, yeah, we had to go to formula. So basically, you know, like it's fed is best is the right answer, even if like technically, theoretically, you know, breast milk is like a better, you know, it's like the better.
The data thing. Supports it.
Yeah, but like, you know, in general, like theories don't work in the real world. Yeah. So like once that happens, it's like you had to find that mix. So it's like, you know, whatever is going to keep all of you happy is the right answer.
Yeah.
So I'm actually going to pause this here. One, I didn't want to stop us because we were having such a great conversation about this and probably could have kept talking for a while, but we actually are at time. So we only got through one of like my eight. but like I said, I'm not going to stop you because it was actually, I mean, an awesome conversation. And as we've said multiple times, we don't talk about this as dads. We don't talk about this as men. And you all are having a fantastic conversation about this. So we are going to stop it here, and we would love to invite the four of you back for another time to continue the conversation. I think this might just be like the first series of the podcast here, which is like dads talking about babies. That's, you know, a working title right now. But just want to, 4 days on a podcast. You know, what was the movie we were just talking about? Look Who's Talking? This is Look Who's Talking, the dad's version.
You can call it Bicycle Bombs. All you
I want to thank our four dads so much because I've never heard dads talking this much about their children or as candidly. And I know I can imagine what Danny and I are thinking, and I can see Mary and Tiffany in the back and like the nodding and the smiling to all of this. Like, it's nice for us to hear you talking about this as well because we don't get to listen on these conversations. So I want to thank you for joining us, and that hopefully there will be a part two to this conversation.
It's been fantastic to just hear you guys work through some things. I think too, what I love a lot about this is that as women and as mothers, we're hearing things that I hope you guys go home and talk more about with your partners, right? So, it's been, yeah, just really fun. So I'd love to have you guys back out to talk a little bit more. And thank you, Jess. Oh, awesome.
And we'll wrap it up.
We'll wrap it up. Thanks, guys.
So that's the end of part one of this conversation with our dads. Danny, what are you taking away from this?
I think for me, I took away a few things, honestly. I took away that dads do not have support systems. And again, that's a huge problem. And because they don't have support systems, they, even if they want to show up, they sometimes don't know how to. And I think that's what we're going to talk a little bit about in the next episode. We really dig into modern fatherhood and the expectations around what millennial mothers and wives are expecting of their partners, and what maybe their bosses or their workplaces or their own fathers are expecting them to deliver, and how that juxtaposition is really creating problems for modern dads.
Mm-hmm. I think if what I'm taking away from our show today is that if you get a couple of dads in a room and specifically say, hey, let's talk about fatherhood, they will talk about it. There was no end to this conversation. And so a question that I ask myself is, are we just not doing enough in our society to support dads and to be able to provide them the space to be able to have these conversations in a way that they can truly support each other? Because I think so many things go back to, if we want to support the moms, we have to also support the dads. And how are we doing that? And so I'm just so thankful that we have a couple of dads in our life that will put themselves into this space, not knowing what we were going to ask them, and just leaning into it.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. And we're going to catch up with them next. So let's check out what we've got in stock.
Thank you all so much for joining us today on The Tightrope. We know you really are juggling 1,000 things, and it means a lot to us that you listen in. If you liked this episode, make sure you follow and subscribe to us on your favorite streaming networks. And of course, if you know a mom that needs to hear this, or a dad, or anybody else, share us. Join us next week while we wrap up the round table with our dads.
What do you think is probably the biggest influence your dad had on the way that you parent Vivi today?
The way that I parent my daughter is not like my father.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's because of like me, or do you think
I think that's because of you and the expectations of fathers today?
Interesting.
There's a whole different level of involvement that I can't just go to work for 8-10 hours a day and leave you to be the sole parent. It's not even like a question at this point, but it was the norm then.
Right.
So
that's next week. So until then, just put one foot in front of the other. Thanks, guys.